Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, my name is Todd Nesloni, and I would like to welcome you to our 50th episode of Edu All-Stars. Woo! Cannot believe that we have made it to number 50, but like I said, my name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me at Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And we just want to welcome everyone to the podcast. I always forget that I have to do that right there. We changed that up about like 7 or 8 episodes ago, so I still haven't got that part down yet. But anyway, I'd like to welcome everyone to the podcast, and thanks for the great response and going out there to iTunes and giving us some ratings and getting out on our blog and posting some comments under each of the different episodes, just letting us know what you like, what you don't like. Really cool, helps us stay motivated, and just super appreciative.
And we would like to thank Remind 101 for being our sponsor for this week's episode. If you haven't checked out Remind 101, definitely do. They're a great resource for connecting with parents and students through text messaging. They are free. It is a one-way communication tool. It is awesome. We utilize it all the time at my campus and with my students and parents. So I definitely recommend check them out at remind101.com, or you can get a link to their website on our website, eduallstars.com.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we just encourage you to use the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversations, and just kind of hopefully we can get some back-channel conversations going along while we're live with Ben.
And we are excited this week to have Ben Gilpin on with us today. He is an elementary principal in Southern Michigan whose goal is to positively impact lives and who believes that all kids can succeed. And we appreciate him from doing this. We appreciate him for doing this from his office tonight at 9 o'clock at night. So thanks for being with us, Ben.
Oh, I'm honored to be here. I've watched several of you, you and Kessler and Nageek on here, and it's pretty cool to be invited, so thank you.
And just so all our viewers know, Keegan's out this week. He had some things come up, but he will be back with us soon. So Ben, go ahead and start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you got into education.
Okay, well, let's see. You know, I grew up, my dad is, or actually was, a golf pro, and I grew up right across the street from a golf course. I played tons of golf all through my youth, and I was fortunate enough that I got a golf scholarship to Tri-State University in Angola, Indiana, which is now Trine University. And I was there, and I fully expected to go into golf management, but I got to tell you, I was 100% burnt out of golf, and I thought, no, this is not for me. And during my high school years, one of the things that I enjoyed the most was the times that I got to go down and assist in lower elementary classrooms, everywhere from second and third grade classrooms all the way up to fifth grade. And the one that stuck out for me was when I was in high school and I went back and helped a classmate of mine. Her mom, her name was Mrs. Brocky, and I was able to help out in her class, and I loved it. So then, as I met my future wife in college, she was going into education as well, and she said, "Have you ever thought about it? What do you think?" And I said, "I love working with kids. I just don't know if it's for me, because my experience in school was never that exciting. I was one of those where I did what I was told, but school was just kind of school." Nothing fantastic or anything like that. So, to make a long story short, I did a big pros and cons list, and I decided I was going to give it a shot. Within 2 practicums in college, I was completely hooked. I loved the relationship aspect with the kids. The elementary students were right up my alley. I felt as though I had found my niche, and the rest is history.
And so you actually taught, what did you teach in the classroom? How many years were you in the actual classroom as a teacher?
9 years in fifth grade.
9 years in the fifth grade. Okay,
so. Yeah, all 9 years in fifth?
What's that?
All 9 years in fifth grade.
All 9 years in fifth grade. I did have a couple opportunities to switch grade levels. I loved fifth grade. I loved it.
Self-contained?
You know, even the spring I loved, all the hormones that were raging and everything like that. I loved it all. So fifth grade was fantastic. Now being an elementary principal, I get to see the whole spectrum all the way down to our young fives all the way up to fifth grade. And every single grade level has its own set of fantastic qualities. I still have a soft spot for my fifth graders. So that was my niche for 9 years.
So Todd kind of went through this year here, where he stepped out of the classroom starting next year, and I'm in my graduate program right now for administration. And how did you know, like, when you were ready to kind of get out of the classroom and you were ready to, you know, get into administration? Was that the leap, or did you go somewhere before that, or did you go right into administration?
Well, I think there's three things that happened. The first one was, obviously, we have to take continuing education courses, and I didn't want just to take random continuing ed courses. I wanted it to go towards a master's. So step one was I got into a master's program. The local university here, Spring Arbor University, had a educational program, and I jumped right in and actually got a lot of friends that I still know that were in the program together. The second step was I had several colleagues that constantly came up to me and said, you know, have you ever thought about it? Or, you know, eventually we're going to lose you to administration because you're really good at what you do. And, you know, a lot of positive praise felt good, but mm-hmm. I wasn't really ready. And then I think the third aspect, and I don't want this to come out wrong, but, you know, I'm going to be candid with you, is the environment that I taught in was really heavy with test scores. And I thought I could create a better environment, and I thought it was time for me to start looking. I did love teaching fifth grade. In fact, it was a great opportunity because I had a fifth grade position, and I was looking at going into administration, so I couldn't lose. I figured, okay, if I get the position in administration, I'm going to be overjoyed, but if I don't, I still love teaching fifth grade, and I think for some people that are kind of on the fence, do I or do I not, if you get yourself into a can't-miss situation where either you get it and you're excited or you don't and you still are doing what you love, that's a great spot to be in.
So you've been administrator for how long now?
Actually finishing up my fourth year, and it's been quite a journey.
So what would you say in those 4 years is probably the biggest lesson you've learned as an administrator?
Whew, biggest lesson. Well, I think there's multiple lessons to be learned. The number one thing for administrators is establishing trust. Trust is ongoing, but especially that first year, actually first 2 years, trust is just, it's one of those things where as soon as you think you got it, it smacks you in the face and you don't have it. You know, it's one of those things for me is my first year was completely trying to build trust. And I felt like I did with several, but not with all. And then year two, as we all know, teacher evaluations came out. And imagine that. You feel like you're building trust, and then, oh, now you have to evaluate everyone and put a number on them. How do you think that went over? So, you know, that trust is absolutely the number one key. The second thing is, you know, making sure that you've got a shared vision. And, you know, I wanted my vision to be our vision. So, you know, it kind of came through a process, a lot of conversations. I would say I still feel most comfortable in my one-on-one or small group conversations. And standing in front of my entire staff is sometimes a little daunting. I love having those small conversations that just take place in teachers' classrooms or in the hallway, trying to build trust and build that shared vision.
So what you're also a connected educator. You got tons of followers on Twitter. And can you tell us kind of a little bit about how you began that journey? And just I know you've also deal with tools like Voxer as well. Talk about Voxer as well.
Okay, I'll start with the connected educator piece because once again, to be real candid with you, it was probably one of my darkest days a couple years back that kind of spurred me into being a connected educator. I've got a great administrative team. I have a fantastic staff over here. I mean, I can't say enough great things about them. But in year two, it wasn't what it was now. And I felt like I was on an island. I felt like I was isolated. I felt stifled. I felt like I was drowning in some ways. And I happened to, you know, I had a Twitter account, but I never used it. And in one instance, you know, it was just an absolute, just abominable week where, you know, I had a staff member get upset with me, I had a parent get upset with me, and I had this to-do list that was a million lines long, and I was feeling completely overwhelmed, and I said to my wife, I just don't know if I can do this, and she tried to encourage me, lift me up, and things like that, and then I decided late that evening I was just going to jump on Twitter and just kind of see what it was all about. I knew I had an account, but I didn't really do much. And I got to give a shout out to Kurt Reese, at Kurt Reese, and Jessica Johnson, at Principal J. I was looking at their blogs and looking at some of the tweets that they put out there, and I happened to stumble across Jessica's Monday musings that she sends to her staff, and I thought, I can do that. And it started to push me as an educator, trying to get myself to get better, be a better communicator. And I thought if I'm a better communicator, it's going to be beneficial to everybody involved. So that was probably part one with getting connected. And it's funny how it all started, because it was probably one of the darker moments in year two that kind of spurred me into that moment. So I would say to anybody out there that's on the fence, you know, with Twitter especially, why not give it a shot? Why not just kind of lurk out there and see what's going on with Twitter, and you might be surprised at what you find. As far as Voxer goes, that's another We Amigo. I'm not a We Amigo. I guess they adopted me, but Tom Whitford pushed me into Voxer, all mainly due to EdCamp Leader, which is going to be in Philadelphia this year on August 4th. A bunch of us were planning a road trip, which has now turned into a flight. So it's just kind of morphed into its own thing. But Tom got me on Voxer, and I've got multiple groups on there. But I gotta give a shout out to a bunch of my guys that I'm in contact with constantly. I hope it just doesn't open up and start jabbing at you guys right now. But I'm on here, Aaron Becker, Aaron underscore Becker 32, Kurt Reese, Jeff Zoll, Jimmy Casas, Joe Mazza, Joe Sanfilippo, Tom Murray, Tom Whitford, Tony Sinanis. Those guys have been great on Voxer with me. We've been basically for the last 2 months or so, we've been just collaborating, making each other laugh, kind of commiserating, and just a whole bunch of great things. So Voxer has now turned into a great tool for kind of a personal touch to the feedback and to the isolation. Twitter can be personal, especially if you do the direct messaging, but I feel like Voxer's a little bit more personal. You can hear tone of voice. It's a great tool. If you're not on Voxer, I highly recommend it.
So let me just put forth a situation. See, this is how I'm envisioning you guys using this. A lot of those names that you listed were administrators. But, like, you come across a situation throughout the day that you may not have been in before, you may not have handled before, and you're like, hey, I need some help with this. And rather than reaching out to maybe someone in your district or whatever, you got all these quality educators right at your fingertips, and you're like, hey, check this out. I've got this situation. What would you guys do? And then they kind of respond back. Is that has it been used that way prior? Or?
It has. It has, Kessler. Yeah. You know, it's we've done that. We've also – we have conversations on technology as far as are we one-to-one, or are we a two-to-one? What device are we using? What would you recommend to a superintendent? You know, all those sorts of different conversations, kind of the behind-the-scenes It's been a mixture of the managerial side and the leadership side. So it's been really great. And you know, yes. I often find myself, I may not be the one doing all the talking. I may be the one doing a lot of listening, and I'm still learning.
That's how I am. That's because I'm in one of the Voxer groups like you have been, and it's a very large group. And I was telling my new AP that I'm working with, we were going to a training today, and we were talking in the car, and I was like, you know what? I said, I'm in this Voxer group with all these admin, and I said, I just sat there this weekend and just listened to the conversation. I said, I feel like I learned more just sitting there listening to those admin talk back and forth about how they deal with things and the struggles they have and all this stuff. I mean, it was an incredible amount of learning that for me just sitting there and listening.
Yeah, you talk about truly like breaking down the walls of a school. This is so cutting edge to me. Right? I mean, it's what an incredible tool that you, and the way you guys are using it is just phenomenal. It's so awesome.
Well, it's you know, Todd and I are in a Voxer group with Brad Gustafson, and what's nice is we don't have to have a daily conversation. We kind of just check in with each other every few days, and usually there's something either with a leadership aspect or something going on in our school, and it's just nice to have different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice. I mean, you talked about it too, about how we're on Twitter and that's how we've connected with people, but there's just something different sometimes about hearing somebody's voice express something instead of seeing it written out, whether it's in an email or a text or a tweet, just letting somebody sit there and just talk about it. Because we may leave boxers that are 3 or 4 minutes long sometimes, but are not. We wouldn't be typing all of that out on Twitter.
Hey Todd, quickly explain what Voxer is. I think we failed to mention that. So.
Well, correct. See, if you can describe this better, Ben, go ahead. But I would describe it as like a walkie-talkie system where instead of calling your phone and leaving a voicemail, I can get on Voxer and Vox you or a group of people, and they can listen to it whenever they want, respond whenever they want, and it's just a way to verbally exchange information.
I completely agree. I'd add to it as well, though. Couple things. I've had some people say to me, is it just like leaving a voice message if I dial someone's phone? And I guess it is similar, but this is more instantaneous. First of all, if you've ever been, and I'm going to speak to all of the adults, if you've ever been compelled or maybe you've even thought about driving and texting, number one, that's a no-no. Don't do it. But number two, if you're Voxing, you know, you're simply talking into your phone and your eyes are peeled on the road. And I would just say that's another form of a better communication, and don't text and drive. So that's number one. Number two, I've encouraged several of my staff members to get on Voxer as well, because if they happen to go outside for an extra recess at the end of the day, or if they take their kids out, I've got our secretary that's now on Voxer, and they don't have to come down and get one of the walkie-talkies. They have their phone, and they can say, Mrs. Powers, I'm outside, I got my class, one student's absent today, and let me know if anybody comes to get them early. The other aspect is, if I happen to go in and do a walkthrough or an observation in the classroom, and I know that I've got a busy couple things going on, and I can't get right back and email that teacher, I can get on Voxer, and I can just say, Mrs. Smith, I love that you just did this in your classroom. That was so cool. I just wanted to give you a quick shout out. Keep it up. Way to go. And look for my email later in the day. So that instantaneous feedback, where not only are they getting the feedback, but they're hearing my tone of voice, is really critical. And the last thing I would add is, and Tom Whitford's, he told me this, with Voxer, you can get out your complete thought without getting interrupted, which sometimes is a good thing.
Well, I also like Voxer because I'm a control freak sometimes, and I like that it tells me when somebody's listened to it. And when you leave a voicemail, you don't always get that, because I'm always like, did they get the voicemail? Did they know that I called them? Did it go through? Did everything work? And so for me, for some of my friends, I'm like, oh, okay, I know they read it. It doesn't matter if they responded or not. I know they heard it. So you also blog quite a bit, Ben, and I love your blog posts. Have you always been a writer naturally?
No. Oh, goodness, no. no. You know what? going back to my middle school years, all I thought about middle school was girls. So all of my my writing journals were basically either I was going to be a pro golfer or about girls. So I didn't do a whole lot of writing, and when I did do some writing, I always felt kind of beaten up by some of my teachers, and I had great teachers. But I think we know more now than we ever have, and sometimes I felt that some of the feedback and some of the marks on my papers were kind of harsh, and it was always grammatical. I got to fix this grammatical error, this grammatical, because I felt like I had great ideas, but my grammar wasn't perfect. Maybe that's why I married an English major, and she can take a look at all of my papers for me. Don't tell anybody that, but that's actually the truth. That's basically the story with the writing in the past. But I have, you know, I will tell you, Todd and Kessler, that I feel like I got a lot of stories, and I feel blessed with a really good memory. And I think that people don't mind hearing some of these stories, and I would say that the majority of my posts are reflective, and you know, I don't mind sharing pieces. I don't mind being candid and honest with people and saying this is what I did really well, and this is what I bombed and flopped. And I think it's important that we, as leaders, we model some of those that transparency and that willingness to just stand out and say, you know what, I'm going to learn from it, I'm going to own it, and I'm going to move forward.
Yeah, you kind of answered this question, but like, what's one of the kind of the biggest thing you've learned through blogging?
Well, the biggest thing I think is that you know, when I'm in the middle of a blog, it's usually pretty passionate to me, and you know, some people say or have said to me, do these ideas just pop into your head? And most weeks, you know, I something will start kind of brewing like Tuesday or Wednesday, and I know exactly which way I'm going to go with it. This week I've got a really good idea which way I'm going to go with it, but I know I'm going up to Mackinac the next 2 days. I may see something in Mackinac that I go, oh, got to do that, and then that one will get kind of shelved, and I'll just kind of jot down some notes. But first of all, I got to be passionate about it. Second, I've got to, you know, I try to make it so it's connected to what we're doing here at Warner. And what I found is so many things that we're doing here at Warner, people connect to around the world. And I find that to be really cool, because I know I taught 15 minutes from here, and it wasn't the same district. It was a completely separate district. And I always thought, I'm amazed, or look at how good this school district is. They're amazing. I bet they do everything completely different. And there's so many things that Western does that are phenomenal, but kids are still kids. Adults are still adults. So when I'm putting out the stories of Warner, people connect to it, because I think that we all are in the same little dome together where we can relate and understand what's going on across the country. Kind of breaks down that barrier.
Mm-hmm. So moving back to you as an administrator and you on your campus, how do you build that sense of community? Because you talked about how you put a lot of work into building trust within your staff. How do you build that sense of community on a campus as an administrator?
Number one, you got to model it. You got to be. Number two, you got to be visible. Number three, it's got to be attitude. And for me, I try to be extremely visible, whether it's, greeting every single student at the front door every morning, saying goodbye to them in the afternoon, going out to recess, going to sporting events, going to extracurriculars and plays and dances. And, you know, when parents see you show up to an event, and they see that dedication and that visibility, I think they tend to really appreciate it, and they know that you're invested. The other aspect, you know, the positive attitude, for me, you know, I don't know how better to say it. Being the Warner Elementary principal makes me a better person, because every day I know that I need to be great for my 408 students. And not only my students, but also staff and community and everything. But I need to be great for my students. I need to be positive. I need to be given high fives, and I need to be their biggest cheerleaders, because they are counting on me to be consistent and uplifting. At times, I got to be the disciplinarian. But even when I'm disciplining a student, you know, there's a lot of conversation that goes into that. There's a lot of trying to be a teacher and not just a disciplinarian. And that's the role that I have tried to be from day one. Understand, it's one of those Stephen Covey's seven habits: seek first to understand, then to be understood. And that's really the role I try to take as an administrator. I try to understand first before I pass judgment.
What about when you have to work with getting teachers on board that may not want to be on the ship with you, that may not have a positive outlook, or not that you probably have any of those teachers at your school at all, but every school has the negative Nancys and the how do we get those people on board?
Well, I've been told multiple times if you can shift a naysayer. That is probably one of that will a naysayer to the positive speaks volumes of leadership. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that it happens all the time, but I would say, you know, even in at Warner Elementary, I would say 90% of the staff reads my blog. My goal is 100%, but I've been told by several people that 90% is pretty darn good.
That's damn good.
So, you know, as far as shifting the naysayer, as far as getting everybody on board, I it's building those relationships. It comes back to individualizing. How am I going to get someone on board? And maybe it's just going to be in really small ways. And I've had some really difficult conversations over the last 4 years. I've tried to be empathetic. I've tried to be human. I've tried to be honest. But I've also tried to be caring. And sometimes some of those difficult conversations, I realize, and it stings, but I need to back off, give them some space, and then try to reconnect later. And there's a couple individuals that over the last couple years, there's been some tension. And in the summertime, I'll just say to them, hey, let's go get some lunch. Let's go chat and talk. And we try to build up that relationship aspect. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jeff Zoll shared a great line the other day with me that I think a lot of us could learn from. He had his local pastor had shared a strategy. And the strategy with dealing with some challenging people and challenging situations is you need to trace it, trace the problem, face it, and then erase it. So trace it, face it, erase it. And I thought that was a great line. In fact, it'll probably be a blog post probably sometime soon for me. But we all deal with challenges. And where did it come from? Where's the challenge? Where's that challenge kind of, where's the origin? How can you deal with it head on? And then once you deal with it head on, how do you move forward? So how do you erase it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Ben, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in any career, whether you're a teacher, administrator, whatever part you play. How do you stay grounded and focused on the positive things that are happening around you instead of allowing yourself to get sucked in by the negative?
Well, it's probably a handful of things for me. It's trying to keep balance, trying to keep perspectives. I've got two great boys. I've got a sixth grader, and I've also got a third grader. I've got a absolutely amazing and supportive wife. I've got a great administrative team, and I've also got one heck of a PLN that when I'm having a rough day, you know, within moments, they're going to lift me right up. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, I just had kind of a cruddy day, and I got on the Vox, and I got on Twitter, and I had Todd. Todd, you were lifting me up, Brad Gustafson, Amber Tiemann, Joe Mazza, Jimmy Casas. I mean, I got guys all around the country and females all around the country just helping lift me up. So, you know, having a great PLN like that really helps. The other thing that I really like to do is I like to stay fit. I exercise, I run, and running for me is a nice release. It kind of gets some of that stress and that some of that stuff that I'm feeling off. But ultimately, you know what it comes down to? It comes down to perspectives. I mean, a bad issue for me in the big scheme of things is not that bad of an issue.
Mm-hmm. So is there a moment in your career when you kind of look back and there's something you're really proud of accomplishing? Let's keep it like as an administrator. Like, what's something that you're most proud of as being an administrator?
Well, that's a tricky question. I am really proud of our building. I'm proud of what we are now. I'm proud of the journey that we're on. Boy, you stumped me, Kessler. I was I was like, Kessler is not going to stump me. But that's a tough one. Sometimes I look back and maybe some of the biggest challenges are what I'm most proud of. Dealing with some adversity. And my first year here at Warner Elementary, there was a lot of adversity. We had my secretary, and bless her, she is an angel. She lost her husband to mesothelioma. We had a car accident within 200 yards of the school, and a grandfather of a couple of our kids passed away. There was a lot of bad stuff going on in a very short amount of time. And I walked into the teacher's lounge with all the staff in there, and this was maybe 6 weeks on the job. And I just said to him, I've heard so many amazing things about this staff. I've heard about how great you are, how you lift each other up. I said, you know what? The chips are down. What are we going to do? How are we going to lift each other up? How are we going to pick each other up off the deck? You could have heard a pin drop. And I had a couple of veteran teachers that came up to me over the next couple weeks, and they said, you know what? That was the turning point. And you find out a lot about someone when the chips are down. It's easy when things are good.
Sure.
When things aren't good, that's when you really find out the true character and the true true person. So I think that might be it, but that's a tough question, Kessler.
No, that's a good answer. That's definitely a great answer.
Well, it's such a serious answer for our non-serious next question.
Transfer over. Get back up. Now,
I felt like I was like, wow, we may have our first crying moment. This is our Oprah moment here.
Now, before you ask this, I got to say, I want to keep it light, but I cannot even compete with Jeremy Heath. That was amazing.
My head's still spinning from that one. That was, 4 or 5 weeks ago now?
Keegan always says that's his favorite because he couldn't stop laughing. He was like, I didn't even know what to say. I didn't even know how to react.
His tweets are very similar. I mean, they like, you see his tweets and you see like his neurons just firing all over the place. It's just crazy.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, Ben, you need to get one of your teachers to do a mystery Skype with him because it is just as entertaining, but then your kids get to partake. That's what I did with mine, and they ate it up.
I'll remember that. I got a couple that I'm sure would do it.
Well, Ben, if someone were to describe you in three words, what three words would you hope that they would use to describe you?
I would hope for caring, because I know that that's a big part of who I am. I would hope that they would say that I'm dedicated. And the third one, I strive for consistency, and they probably wouldn't say that. They would probably say that I'm very reflective. That would probably be the third area that they would, and that's probably fine. But I strive to be as consistent as possible. I want to be someone that people can count on, level-headed, even, positive. But they would probably say reflective as several of my friends tell me, I'm a reflective guy.
Yeah, that's good. Have you always been that way, or that's something I've learned in my later years? I'm now almost 40 this summer, and like it's something I've had to learn, like in the last probably 5 years.
Well, I probably should credit my father on that one. And I do that with a scrunched up forehead because I can't tell you how many times I was on the golf course and I'd get done and he would make me go back shot by shot through my round. What could you improve? What could you do better? And then it went from golf to basketball and what could you do better? And, you know, so he was constantly making me reflect on some of those sporting events. And I think it just carried over to life for me.
Yeah, what a great life lesson, though. I mean, you probably hated it back when you were 9 or whatever, but now you're probably very thankful for that.
Oh, it's just who I am now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So looking back, like 5, 10 years, what's a piece of advice you would give your former self, like your current self, giving your former self some advice?
I thought about this, and one of the things for me, if I could go back to when I was beginning teaching, and I would say this to anybody that's in the early stages of their career, don't be afraid to fail. I had a fear of failure when I started out. I did not take a lot of risks. I was very conservative, and not that I was a bad teacher, but it was just one of those where I just didn't take a lot of risks. And I would say to any beginning educator, even if it's a calculated risk, take risks, take chances, because that's when the real learning takes place.
Yeah, that's great.
So one thing that we always like to end the show on, Ben, and I know you've watched the show, so you know this one's coming, but what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
Right now, well, you know, we have... There are a couple different things. We are trying very hard to tell our story in the Western School District. And Colby Sharp, the handle for Colby is at Colby Sharp. He's a huge part of the Nerdy Book Club and Nerd Camp that's going to be out here at the Western School District on July 7th and 8th. Yep, that's a promo. Thanks, guys. He and I are doing Panthers podcast, and it's been very fun. In fact, today was our fifth episode. We've been doing it for about 5 weeks. We've got them on iTunes. We've got them on Podomatic, and it's basically just highlighting the stories of Western educators, because the goal that we really have is trying to promote ourselves and say, hey, look how great things are here in the Western School District. The feedback has been phenomenal. We're trying to be somewhere around the 15-minute mark. We're just a shade longer than we want to be, but we're getting better. But that's something right now, trying to tell our story and share it with the community has been a big part of probably the last month and a half or so for me. On top of that, I'm just going to put a little plug in. We have started a couple after-school programs, and I'm excited by these. The first one was a Minecraft club, and it went for 12 weeks. And I'm going to admit it right now, I really don't know much about Minecraft, but I can speak the lingo, and I can definitely kind of run it as the person in charge of the club. The kids loved it. We had actually 97 kids participate in Minecraft club over Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So it was about 32 each day. And we also had a Lego club that went on as well. And we had about 70 kids in our Lego club. So I love the after-school clubs, getting parents in the building, getting kids excited about being at school. And the Panthers podcast is probably the most current one. So thanks for asking that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So who's the audience for that Panthers podcast? Like, is that for the community or parents, that kind of thing?
Yep, it is. It's community and staff. And the feedback that we've received from the Western School District staff has been phenomenal. I mean, they're awesome. Learning about things that are going on in the district that they had no idea about.
Yeah,
we've got 6 buildings, and we're basically 3,000 in our district. And most people know everybody, but you don't always know what's going on in the classrooms, and you don't know those behind-the-scenes things. And this has been a great way to highlight some of those stories being told in the classrooms that we just don't know all about. So we've really enjoyed sharing that stuff.
Yeah, that's another fantastic idea. I've got a lot of takeaways from this episode for sure. So, yeah, we just really want to thank you for coming on tonight, Ben. It was really cool to get to meet you. I've heard lots about you from friends, common friends that we have, and it's really nice to get to talk to you. So I just really appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us.
Hey, I appreciate the invite. Number 50, right? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, number 50, that's significant.
You're a milestone episode, Ben. Absolutely, we were screaming for this one.
Number 50.
That's right. When people go scanning through the hundreds of podcasts, they're going to stop on those milestones because they're going to figure these people are more important than the other ones. So. ways you can connect with us, Twitter, at EduAllStarsHQ. Man, we need to lose that HQ, but anyway, we'll figure that out.
Somebody already has the other one.
Well, we can get rid of it because he doesn't use it. So we need to sequester that from him. I think someone told us how to do that once, mate. That was actually the Department of Education told us how to do that because they've done it before, right? So we need to figure out how to do that. Anyway, you can hashtag us with EduAllStars. And then does that even make sense? I don't think it does. But anyway, website, eduallstars.com/podcast. You can find all 50 episodes of the EduAllStars amazing interviews, and then also on iTunes, you can search out EduAllStars. If you just type in EduAllStars in Google, you're going to find all these things. So
as Chris crashes and burns here, dude. Well, and, summer's upon us, and Chris, Keegan, and I have a lot going on this summer, but we didn't want to leave our listeners and our viewers out with some fresh episodes. And so even though Chris and Keegan and I are going to be very busy in June, what we're going to do is we're going to do a special marathon interview series on Sunday and Monday. So this upcoming Sunday, we have June 8th, we have three episodes that we're going to be recording. At 7 p.m. Central, we have Nick Provenzano. At 8 p.m. Central, we have Ryan McLean. And at 9 p.m. Central, we have Andrea Keller. And then on Monday, you'll get our fourth episode in 24 hours. Monday, June 9th, we're interviewing Kim Bearden, who is the co-founder of the Ron Clark Academy, and she also teaches at the Ron Clark Academy, and she's got a new book coming out. So we are so excited that she found out, that she gave us time to talk to her as well. And so that'll cover us for the month of June as we take off the rest of the days and travel and have crazy schedules, but leave y'all with some episodes and some learning that'll still take place.
Yeah, and all those will be live, and we'll kind of drip those out onto iTunes every couple of weeks throughout the summer, or throughout June until we get back a regular schedule. So, again, we'd like to thank Remindo 101 for sponsoring the podcast. Amazing app, website, tool, and thanks for everyone for listening.
Thank you, guys.